From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Dental health emergencies cost Florida more than $190 million in just 1 year. When more than 160,000 people had no choice but to go to the emergency room, those numbers reveal the acute need for dental health care in our state. And to meet that need in our region, a Lee County clinic opened its doors at a new location this month, where volunteer dentists can provide care for those most in need. We'll talk with the Salvation Army about expanding their We Care clinic and with a patient who says it provided him with his first dental checkup in years. Plus, national and statewide statistics aside, when a person tells you they've been bullied, pushed around, or felt fearful as a result of a hate-related incident, it can have a deeper impact. That's what spurred a local man to invite the Southern Poverty Law Center to Naples to talk about the rise in reports of hate incidents. We'll talk with him and with Leisha Brooks from the SPLC about a program called Teaching Tolerance, which she will detail at a public appearance tomorrow. But first, the news. Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. The Southern Poverty Law Center has been tracking reports of hate incidents through its Report Hate Intake page and grabbed headlines when it released shocking data. The incidents of hate-fueled harassment, attacks, vandalism, and crimes numbered more than 1,000 in the months leading up to last year's election and the months following. The state of Florida is in the top three when ranked among states with increased incidences of anti-Semitism, according to the Anti-Defamation League. The nation is up 86% so far in 2017, mostly vandalism and harassment. In Florida, 2016 saw 137 anti-Semitic incidents statewide. It's things like this and personal stories people have shared with him that got Sandy Gradinger motivated to ask the Southern Poverty Law Center to have a representative come and talk with the community about current status of hate and hate groups in Florida, as well as the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance program. Sandy joins us by phone. Thanks for being part of the conversation today.
Thank you for inviting me, Julie.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here. And the outreach director for the Southern Poverty Law Center will be in Naples tomorrow night speaking at the Temple Shalom. The event is near capacity. So Alicia Brooks is with us to talk about what topics she's going to cover there. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me, Julie. Happy to be here.
Have you seen hate in Southwest Florida? Do you have a question about what to do to help prevent it? What questions might you have? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. First, Sandy Gradinger, what got your wheels spinning to put this event together?
Well, let me tell you how it all started. I was invited to a meeting in Pelican Bay here in Naples of progressives at the house of Dr. Lisa Frun, administrator of the Women's Alliance of Southwest Florida. And the Republicans, Democrats, and independents were at this meeting. And we went around the room. Lisa asked us if we had ideas. And when it came to my turn, I mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center, and that got a big round of applause. So afterwards, I asked Lisa, and I asked also David Holden, who announced at that meeting that he was going to run for Congress. And he said he would be glad to be on our three-person committee. So we went to the rabbi at Temple Shalom, where there was a hate incident. The sign was destroyed there, and asked if we could use those facilities. And he said yes, and then we contacted the Southern Poverty Law Center, and now we got Leisha Brooks here coming tomorrow, and we got almost over 400 people that have signed up already.
That's a lot.
There's still room for more.
There's still room, but that's still a lot of people. So, Leisha Brooks with the Southern Poverty Law Center, how do you view a place like Southwest Florida? I mean, do you see reports from this part of the state regarding hate incidents?
We're seeing hate incidents reported from all across the country, Julie, and you know, Southwest Florida is no different. I applaud the community for coming together to look at kind of what's happening, the status of hate and extremism in the United States. That I believe, is the first step. There really is an increase or an uptick in the number of hate and bias-related crimes and incidents. So we'll be talking about how that looks nationally and how it looks locally and regionally.
And it seems like you look at crimes and incidents, and you look at them, I don't want to say separately, but kind of one feeds the other. So you have actual crimes, and then there are also incidents where, you know, maybe a slur is uttered towards someone, or someone's harassed or just kind of being name called. Is it important to track things at that level?
It's extremely important to call out and condemn hater bias incidents or speech even, because if they go unchecked, then that we'll see an equal kind of increase in the number of hate crimes that are targeted towards that group. So it's important to call it out immediately.
Yeah, that kind of verbal situation can escalate, is what you're...
That's correct. And not necessarily from the same parties, of course, but if people have the impression that it's okay to demean or harass a particular group of people in any given community, then it will follow that hate crimes will follow against that against members of that community.
So what is the current situation with hate incidents in the U.S.? Because we heard about it being pretty severe right around election time and shortly thereafter. Things were pretty tense. Have things calmed down since the fevered pitch of late last year, or are things continuing?
Thankfully, yes, they have calmed down dramatically. And what the Southern Poverty Law Center did, and a number of other groups as well, in addition to the ADL, what we did was kind of track and monitor hate and bias incidents that occurred in the immediate aftermath of the presidential election. We noted, and it's no surprise, that people on the far right, white extremists and white supremacists and anti-Semitics were emboldened by the election of Donald Trump to the presidency, and that produced this tremendous uptick in the number of hate and bias-related incidents. They really feel, and, you know, I'm certainly not speaking for the Trump administration, but they feel like they have an ally in the Trump administration. Some would point to Steve Bannon, you know, as a close advisor, and you know, people who harbor, you know, hate and bias see that as a good thing. So it continues on the one hand, but yes, the spike has gone down.
And kind of correlating to the discussion we just had about just words escalating into something bigger and more dangerous, are you seeing some of these groups or some of this, I suppose, hate theory galvanizing into organized groups? Because I was noticing on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website, you're talking about neo-Confederates have increased to more than 100 active groups. And now there's a new alt-right fight club that's organized in order to disrupt protests. They're called the Fraternal Order of Alt-Nights. Is this unusual?
The latter is unusual. The increase in neo-Confederate groups or adherents to neo-Confederatism really began last year in the aftermath of the whole kind of shooting that happened in Charleston and the taking down of the Confederate flag and Confederate memorials across the country. So that kind of increase in that group is really tied to that. The Fight Club that you mentioned is new and attached to or identifying with what Richard Spencer has coined as the alt-right. What the Southern Poverty Law Center would tell you is that the alt-right is just a rebranding of white supremacy for a younger generation. And so as we've seen on college campuses across the country, when people like Richard Spencer or Milo Yiannopoulos or you know, any of these white nationalists who are seeking to recruit students on college campuses, they have been confronted with a lot of kind of counter protest. And so I think that all of these fight clubs, quote unquote fight clubs, are organizing in response to that.
But I mean, do we need to be worried about that? I mean, that seems a little alarming that there are groups that are kind of finding strength in feeling like they're under attack.
Well, no, it is alarming, and again, that's why kind of everyone's invited to come out and kind of hear what not everyone is paying attention to in the news. You know, we had Richard Spencer in Alabama a couple of weeks ago, and then of course maybe some people saw what happened at Berkeley when you know, violence broke out there, and Coulter just canceled her scheduled appearance. A rescheduled appearance at Berkeley in California for fear of violence. So what we're seeing is a response to the alt-right coming primarily from anti-fascist groups who are really committed to stop white supremacists at any cost, and they sadly support a violent kind of reaction. So we're seeing, you know, peaceful protesters, primarily college students, caught in the middle. It's very dangerous. We've also seen an increase in the number of flyers that are circulating around college campuses promoting white supremacy, and that increase is very alarming.
We've seen that also here at FGCU. Are you seeing a rise in hate based on race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And I wanted to ask you, when you do outreach speeches like this one, what kind of things do you like to focus on?
Well, the big picture, I mean, I think it's important, as I mentioned, for people to understand, well, first, that kind of hate and extremism have been with us for, you know, since the founding for some time. So I want to give people kind of a bird's eye view of the landscape, kind of where we came from, where we are today, so that people can recognize that there is and has been an increase. And then we kind of look at kind of why that is, the shifting demographics that are taking place in the United States, and kind of look at kind of these polls that people often talk about. You know, people are more polarized than ever, more divided than ever. We want to look at some of the ways that we're divided, and how people who support, you know, these white supremacists and anti-Semitic groups are continue to divide us even further, and how it's important for people to speak out. There's been a tremendous increase in anti-Semitism nationally, and it really is a global phenomenon, and it's incumbent upon us to kind of stand up to it and stand up, you know, together. There's been a tremendous increase in Islamophobia. We've seen an increase of anti-Muslim groups, tripling of anti-Muslim groups from 2015 to 2016. So it's important for people to know those things. It's important as people make decisions, policy decisions in their communities, that they know who and what is promoting one policy over the other, and what these things are really based on.
So, and Sandy Gradinger, I wanted to get back with you. You've spent much of your life fighting for human rights, working with Russians during the Soviet era who wanted to move to the U.S., and now you're more focused on civil rights. How is that different?
Well, you don't have to deal with the Russian government. That's a big difference. Although it's more difficult these days to fight for civil rights in our country under the circumstances. Some of the schools here locally have had some problems. One friend of mine's daughter came home and said there were Trump pictures on the locker demeaning disabled reporters, the reporter that was disabled. And she felt very uncomfortable about that and told her father. And also, in the local schools here, there were 360 students being denied public school education, of which the SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, has agreed to take on that case. And then another situation of Mexican, I met this young lady who's working a job and going to school at night to try to get her master's. She's got two parents that worked in Immokalee for 18 years, and she has to hide them for fear of being picked up by the police. So things here in Southwest Florida are, things are happening here. When you see that, you gotta come forward and do something. And a lot of other citizens can do the same.
And one of the things that the Southern Poverty Law Center does, Alicia, is teaching tolerance. Can you tell me a little bit about that messaging?
The Teaching Tolerance program was really created to inoculate students against messages of hate. It was Morris D's idea, one of our founders, as he saw that many of the people that were hate crime perpetrators were young people, or young people becoming susceptible to these messages of hate. So we decided to create a program where we sent out free anti-bias curriculum covering kind of a variety of topics to teachers all across the country to support their teaching of an appreciation for diversity and difference. So we send these materials to every school across the country. We publish a magazine twice a year and send that to every school. We have materials to help them fight hate and bias in the school, website that has anti-bias lessons and activities for every grade level.
Do you find that kids are learning intolerance at home, or are they picking this up at school?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Because, I mean, I think it would be kind of difficult to teach kids tolerance at school if they're being raised by parents who are teaching otherwise.
Sure, it's difficult. I'm a former fifth grade teacher myself. But the truth of the matter is that students spend more time, much more quality time with teachers than they do with their parents. So teachers can make a tremendous difference in developing an appreciation for diversity amongst the student population. Now, students who oftentimes or hopefully are going to schools in more integrated settings, they have the greatest opportunity to develop this appreciation for difference. Teachers setting up something as simple as kind of, you know, guidelines around respectful communication and making it a rule not to denigrate a certain group of people or people in the classroom. Those things can go a long way in building empathy and support for, you know, students who they might see as different, and it counters the messages of it may counter the bigoted messages they're receiving at home. But if they have an opportunity to practice civility and acceptance in the classroom and in their schools throughout their K-12 career, there's a wonderful likelihood that they won't, you know, play out those bigoted beliefs that they inherited from their families or from their you know
their particular neighborhood or mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. a personal group, just creating a different norm at school.
Right, and if people develop real relationships, especially at a young age, they're less likely to believe the bigoted messages that they hear about these people.
Yeah, we have a call coming in from Lisa who has a comment to share with us. Lisa, what would you like to share? Lisa, are you with us?
Hi there. Hi. Yeah,
hi.
I'm here. Yeah, I made the mistake of listening at the same time. I'm one of the organizers, Sandy had mentioned. I just wanted to put in one comment, and that is that although there was a seating limit that was set up, we've really, Temple Israel has been wonderful and cooperative, especially the facilities manager, and he has opened the space up. So that if there are last-minute people coming in, it would be better if they register by emailing me at laf307@gmail.com. But if they can't, I don't think we're going to have to turn anyone away.
Okay, and we do have a link to that email address on our website at wgcunews.org. Click on the Gulf Coast Live tab, and you can find a link to that. And we have another call coming in from Robert from Cape Coral. Robert, what would you like to say?
Hello there. I'd like to start off by saying that I'm proudly and staunchly of no party affiliation. But what I'm hearing in your conversation is a very left-wing bias, in that the widespread violence from anti-Trump and Antifa protests have been ignored in your conversation. So I wonder why.
You know what, Robert, that's a good point, and I do actually have a question that I was getting ready to ask exactly about that. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, well, I do have that question, and that was my next one. Alicia, your organization does track hate based on race, sexuality, religion, pretty much everything. So I wanted to ask you, with all the protests, are you seeing or tracking any hate incidents in a less typical direction, like white conservatives being attacked or harassed?
Yes, but they're numerically and much smaller. It's much smaller. If you look at the incidents that occurred post election, there were a few that were targeting Trump supporters.
Okay,
but very few in comparison.
But you are hearing it, and you are tracking it, and you're seeing it. But the numbers are just smaller.
Mm-hmm. We track them all, and I would add that. If you go to our website and look at our hate map or the groups that we identify as hate or extremist groups, you will find a number of what we're labeling black extremist groups. So though the vast majority of the groups on our hate list are white supremacists and anti-Semitic, there are a number of black extremist groups, including the Nation of Islam.
Yeah. We have another question coming in from Deborah from Cape Coral. Deborah, what would you like to share?
Yes, on Easter weekend, I was actually stunned to see an ad in a local Florida weekly newspaper, a full-page ad by a prominent local builder. And as I said, it was Easter weekend, and instead of wishing a happy Easter to possibly his Christian customers or clients, he went on to imply in his ad that the only true religion is Christianity. And he went so far as to express that Muhammad is dead and Buddha is dead, but Jesus Christ lives. I am a raised Roman Catholic, but I was stunned by this ignorance that to imply that the only right religion is the Christian religion. And I did write a letter to the news press expressing my opinion. It did not appear. To Cape Coral Breeze, it did appear. I also wrote a letter expressing this thought to the builder. And, of course, he never responded. But I just thought this was hateful and ignorant. Mm.
Yeah, and I wanted to send that to Alicia. Do you see businesses coming forward or being emboldened to put these kinds of things into their advertising?
Well, you know, I live in Alabama, so that kind of thing happens pretty regularly. But I want to applaud you, Deborah, for noticing and writing a letter to the editor and then also trying to contact the builder. It's less important that they publish your letter or that you received any return acknowledgement from the builder. You stood up and said that, you know, you thought this was wrong. And this is really how it begins. You know, it's we cannot, you know, kind of place one religious tradition over another. That's not what this country is about.
And we do have to continue that conversation at your event tomorrow night, but we're going to have to leave it now because we have run out of time. We have links on our website at wgcunews.org for people interested in learning more and attending that event. Just click on the Gulf Coast Live tab, and we'll have to leave it there for today. And I want to thank our guests for being on the show, Sandy Gradinger and Alicia Brooks. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Julie.
Our show today was produced and directed by Matthew Smith with help from John Davis. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.